This is Audible.
Listening Library presents An Ember in the Ashes by Saba Tahir. Read for you by Fiona Hardingham and Steve West. Part 1. The Raid. Chapter 1. Liar. My big brother reaches home in the dark hours before dawn, when even ghosts take their rest. He smells of steel and coal and forge. He smells of the enemy. He folds his scarecrow body through the window, bare feet silent on the rushes. A hot desert wind blows in after him, rustling the limp curtains. His sketchbook falls to the floor, and he nudges it under his bunk with a quick foot, as if it's a snake. "Where have you been, Darren?" In my head, I have the courage to ask the question, and Darren trusts me enough to answer. "Why do you keep disappearing? Why, when Pop and Nan need you? When I need you?" Every night for almost 2 years I've wanted to ask. Every night I've lacked the courage. I have one sibling left. I don't want him to shut me out like he has everyone else. But tonight's different. I know what's in his sketchbook. I know what it means.
"You shouldn't be awake,"
Darren's whisper jolts me from my thoughts. He has a cat's sense for traps. He got it from our mother. I sit up on the bunk as he lights the lamp. No use pretending to be asleep.
"It's past curfew, and 3 patrols have gone by. I was worried." "I can't avoid the soldiers, Liar. Lots of practice."
He rests his chin on my bunk and smiles mother's sweet, crooked smile. A familiar look, the one he gives me if I wake from a nightmare or we run out of grain. "Everything will be fine," the look says. He picks up the book on my bed.
"Gather in the Night," he reads the title.
"Spooky.
What's it about?"
"I just started it. It's about a djinn." I stop.
"Clever. Very clever.
He likes hearing stories as much as I like telling them."
"Forget that. Where were you? Pop had a dozen patients this morning."
"And I filled in for you because he can't do so much alone, which left Nan to bottle the trader's jams by herself. Except she didn't finish. Now the trader won't pay us, and we'll starve this winter.
And why in the skies don't you care?"
I say these things in my head. The smile's already dropped off Darren's face. "I'm not cut out for healing," he says. "Pop knows that." I want to back down, but I think of Pop's slumped shoulders this morning. I think of the sketchbook. "Pop and Nan depend on you. At least talk to them. It's been months." I wait for him to tell me that I don't understand, that I should leave him be, but he just shakes his head, drops down into his bunk, and closes his eyes like he can't be bothered to reply.
"I saw your drawings."
The words tumble out in a rush. And Darren's up in an instant, his face stony.
"I wasn't spying," I say. "One of the pages was loose. I found it when I changed the rushes this morning."
"Did you tell Nan and Pop? Did they see?"
"No, but..."
"Liar, listen."
10 hells. I don't want to hear this. I don't want to hear his excuses.
"What you saw is dangerous," he says.
"You can't tell anyone about it.
Not ever.
It's not just my life at risk. There are others. Are you working for the Empire, Darren? Are you working for the Marshals?"
He is silent. I think I see the answer in his eyes, and I feel ill. My brother is a traitor to his own people. My brother is siding with the Empire. If he hoarded grain or sold books or taught children to read, I'd understand. I'd be proud of him for doing the things I'm not brave enough to do. The Empire raids, jails, and kills for such crimes. But teaching a 6-year-old her letters isn't evil. Not in the minds of my people, the scholar people. But what Darren has done is sick. It's a betrayal.
The Empire killed our parents, I whisper. Our sister.
I want to shout at him, but I choke on the words. The Marshals conquered Scholarlands 500 years ago, and since then, they've done nothing but oppress and enslave us. Once, the Scholar Empire was home to the finest universities and libraries in the world. Now, most of our people can't tell a school from an armory.
How could you side with the Marshals? How, Darin?
It's not what you think, Lyra. I'll explain everything, but... He pauses suddenly, his hand jerking up to silence me when I ask for the promised explanation. He cocks his head toward the window. Through the thin walls, I hear Pop snores, Nan shifting in her sleep, a mourning dove's croon. Familiar sounds, home sounds. Darin is something else. The blood drains from his face and dread flashes in his eyes. Lyra, he says. Raid.
But if you work for the Empire, then why are the soldiers raiding us?
I'm not working for them. He sounds calm, calmer than I feel. Hide the sketchbook. That's what they want. That's what they're here for. Then he's out the door, and I'm alone. My bare legs move like cold molasses, my hands like wooden blocks. Hurry, Lyra! Usually the Empire raids in the heat of the day. The soldiers want scholar mothers and children to watch. They want fathers and brothers to see another man's family enslaved. As bad as those raids are, the night raids are worse. The night raids are for when the Empire doesn't want witnesses.
I wonder if this is real, if it's a nightmare.
It's real, Lyra. Move. I drop the sketchbook out the window into a hedge. It's a poor hiding place, but I have no time. Nan hobbles into my room, her hands so steady when she stirs vats of jam or braids my hair, flutter like frantic birds, desperate for me to move faster. She pulls me into the hallway. Darin stands with Pop at the back door. My grandfather's white hair is scattered as a haystack, and his clothes are wrinkled. But there's no sleep in the deep grooves of his face. He murmurs something to my brother, then hands him Nan's largest kitchen knife. I don't know why he bothers. Against the ciric steel of a martial blade, the knife will only shatter.
You and Darin leave through the backyard, Nan says, her eyes darting from window to window. They haven't surrounded the house yet.
No, no, no.
Nan?
I breathe her name, stumbling when she pushes me toward Pop.
Hide in the east end of the quarter.
Her sentence ends in a choke, her eyes on the front window. Through the ragged curtains, I catch a flash of a liquid silver face. My stomach clenches.
A mask, Nan says. They've brought a mask.
Go, Lyra, before he gets inside.
What about you? What about Pop?
We'll hold them off. Pop shoves me gently out the door. Keep your secrets close, love. Listen to Darin. He'll take care of you. Go. Darin's lean shadow falls over me, and he grabs my hand as the door closes behind us. He slouches to blend into the warm night, moving silently across the loose sand of the backyard with a confidence I wish I felt. Although I am 17 and old enough to control my fear, I grip his hand like it's the only solid thing in this world.
I'm not working for them, Darin said.
Then whom is he working for? Somehow he got close enough to the forges of Sarah to draw, in detail, the creation process of the Empire's most precious asset, the unbreakable, curved Sims that can cut through three men at once. Half a millennium ago, the scholars crumbled beneath the Marshal invasion because our blades broke against their superior steel. Since then, we have learned nothing of steelcraft. The Marshals hoard their secrets the way a miser hoards gold. Anyone caught near our city's forges without good reason, scholar or marshal, risks execution, If Darren isn't with the Empire, how did he get near Sarah's forges? How did the Marshals find out about his sketchbook? On the other side of the house, a fist pounds on the front door. Boots shuffle, steel clinks. I look around, wildly, expecting to see the silver armor and red capes of Empire legionnaires. But the backyard is still. The fresh night air does nothing to stop the sweat rolling down my neck. Distantly, I hear the thud of drums from Blackcliff, the mask training school. The sound sharpens my fear into a hard point stabbing at my center. The Empire doesn't send those silver-faced monsters on just any raid. The pounding on the door sounds again.
"In the name of the Empire," an irritated voice says, "I demand you open this door."
As one, Darren and I freeze. "Doesn't sound like a mask," Darren whispers. "Masks speak softly with words that cut through you like a sim. In the time it would take a legionnaire to knock and issue an order, a mask would already be in the house, weapons slicing through anyone in his way." Darren meets my eyes, and I know we're both thinking the same thing. If the mask isn't with the rest of the soldiers at the front door, then where is he? "Don't be afraid, Lyra," Darren says. "I won't let anything happen to you." I want to believe him, but my fear is a tide tugging at my ankles, pulling me under. I think of the couple that lived next door, raided, imprisoned, and sold into slavery 3 weeks ago. "Book smugglers," the marshal said. 5 days after that, one of Pop's oldest patients, a 93-year-old man who could barely walk, was executed in his own home. His throat slit from ear to ear. Resistance collaborator. What will the soldiers do to Nan and Pop? Jail them? Enslave them? Kill them? We reach the back gate. Darren stands on his toes to unhook the latch when a scrape in the alley beyond stops him short. A breeze sighs past, sending a cloud of dust into the air. Darren pushes me behind him. His knuckles are white around the knife handle as the gate swings open with a moan. A finger of terror draws a trail up my spine. I peer over my brother's shoulder into the alley. There is nothing out there but the quiet shifting of sand. Nothing but the occasional gust of wind and the shuttered windows of our sleeping neighbors. I sigh in relief and step around Darren. That's when the mask emerges from the darkness and walks through the gate.
Chapter 2. Elias. The deserter will be dead before dawn. His tracks zigzag like a stuck deer's in the dust of Sarah's catacombs. The tunnels have done him in. The hot air is too heavy down here. The smells of death and rot too close. The tracks are more than an hour old by the time I see them. The guards have his scent now. Poor bastard. If he's lucky, he'll die in the chase. If not, don't think about it. Hide the backpack. Get out of here. Skulls crunch as I shove a pack loaded with food and water into a wall crypt. Helene would give me hell if she could see how I'm treating the dead. But then, if Helene finds out why I'm down here in the first place, desecration will be the least of her complaints. She won't find out. Not until it's too late. Guilt pricks at me, but I shove it away. Helene's the strongest person I know. She'll be fine without me. For what feels like the 100th time, I look over my shoulder. The tunnel is quiet. The deserter led the soldiers in the opposite direction. But safety's an illusion I know never to trust. I work quickly, piling bones back in front of the crypt to cover my trail, My senses primed for anything out of the ordinary. One more day of this. One more day of paranoia and hiding and lying. One day until graduation. Then I'll be free. As I rearrange the crypt's skulls, the hot air shifts like a bear waking from hibernation. The smells of grass and snow cut through the fetid breath of the tunnel. 2 seconds is all I have to step away from the crypt and kneel, examining the ground as if there might be tracks here. Then she is at my back.
Elias, what are you doing down here?
Didn't you hear? There's a deserter loose. I keep my attention fixed on the dusty floor. Beneath the silver mask that covers me from forehead to jaw, my face should be unreadable. But Helena Killer and I have been together nearly every day of the 14 years we've been training at Blackcliff Military Academy. She can probably hear me thinking. She comes around me silently, and I look up into her eyes, as blue and pale as the warm waters of the southern islands. My mask sits atop my face, separate and foreign, hiding my features as well as my emotions. But Hel's mask clings to her like a silvery second skin, and I can see the slight furrow in her brow as she looks down at me. Relax, Elias, I tell myself. You're just looking for a deserter.
He didn't come this way, Hel says.
She runs a hand over her hair, braided, as always, into a tight, silver-blonde crown.
Dex took an auxiliary company off the North Watchtower and into the East Branch Tunnel. You think they'll catch him?
Orc soldiers, though not as highly trained as legionnaires and nothing compared to masks, are still merciless hunters.
Of course they'll catch him.
I fail to keep the bitterness out of my voice, and Helene gives me a hard look.
The cowardly scum, I add. Anyway, why are you awake?
You weren't on watch this morning.
I made sure of it. Those bleeding drums.
Helene looks around the tunnel.
Woke everyone up.
The drums. Of course.
Deserter, they'd thundered in the middle of the graveyard watch. All active units to the walls.
Helene must have decided to join the hunt. Dex, my lieutenant, would have told her which direction I'd gone. He'd have thought nothing of it.
I thought the deserter might have come this way.
I turn from my hidden pack to look down another tunnel.
Guess I was wrong. I should catch up to Dex. Much as I hate to admit it, you're not usually wrong.
Helene cocks her head and smiles at me. I feel that guilt again, wrenching as a fist to the gut. She'll be furious when she learns what I've done. She'll never forgive me.
Doesn't matter. You've decided. Can't turn back now.
Hel traces the dust on the ground with a fair, practiced hand.
I've never even seen this tunnel before.
A drop of sweat crawls down my neck. I ignore it.
It's hot and it reeks, I say. Like everything else down here. Come on, I want to add.
But doing so would be like tattooing, I'm up to no good, on my forehead. I keep quiet and lean against the catacomb wall, arms crossed. The field of battle is my temple. I mentally chart a saying my grandfather taught me the day he met me, when I was 6. He insists it sharpens the mind the way a whetstone sharpens a blade. The sword point is my priest. The dance of death is my prayer. The killing blow is my release.
Helene peers at my blurred tracks, following them, somehow to the crypt where I stowed my pack, to the skulls piled there.
She's suspicious, and the air between us is suddenly tense.
Damn it!
I need to distract her. As she looks between me and the crypt, I run my gaze lazily down her body. She stands 2 inches shy of 6 feet, a half foot shorter than me. She
She's the only female student at Blackcliff. In the black, close-fitting fatigues all students wear, her strong, slender form has always drawn admiring glances. Just not mine. We've been friends too long for that. Come on, notice. Notice me leering and get mad about it. When I meet her eyes, brazen as a sailor fresh into port, she opens her mouth, as if to rip into me. Then she looks back at the crypt. If she sees the pack and guesses what I'm up to, I'm done for. She might hate doing it, but Empire law would demand she report me, and Helene's never broken a law in her life. Elias! I prepare my lie. Just wanted to get away for a couple of days, hell. Needed some time to think. Didn't want to worry you. Boom, 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 boom. The drums. Without thought, I translate the disparate beats into the message they are meant to convey. Deserter caught. All students report to Central Courtyard immediately. My stomach sinks. Some naive part of me hoped the deserter would at least make it out of the city. That didn't take long, I say. We should go. I make for the main tunnel. Helene follows, as I knew she would. She would stab herself in the eye before she disobeyed a direct order. Helene is a true marshal, more loyal to the Empire than to her own mother. Like any good mask in training, she takes Blackcliff's motto to heart. Duty first, unto death. I wonder what she would say if she knew what I'd really been doing in the tunnels. I wonder how she'd feel about my hatred for the Empire. I wonder what she would do if she found out her best friend is planning to desert.
Chapter 3 Liar. The mask saunters through the gate, big hands loose at his sides. The strange metal of his namesake clings to him from forehead to jaw like silver paint, revealing every feature of his face, from the thin eyebrows to the hard angles of his cheekbones. His copper-plated armor molds to his muscles, emphasizing the power in his body. A passing wind billows his black cape, and he looks around the backyard like he's arrived at a garden party. His pale eyes find me, slide up my form, and settle on my face with a reptile's flat regard. "Aren't you a pretty one?" he says. I yank at the ragged hem of my shift, wishing desperately for the shapeless, ankle-length skirt I wear during the day. The mask doesn't even twitch. Nothing in his face tells me what he's thinking. But I can guess. Darren steps in front of me and glances at the fence as if gauging the time it'll take to reach it. "I'm alone, boy." The mask addresses Darren with all the emotion of a corpse. The rest of the men are in your house. You can run, if you like. He moves away from the gate. But I insist you leave the girl. Darren raises the knife. Chivalrous of you, the mask says. Then he strikes, a flash of copper and silver lightning out of an empty sky. In the time it takes me to gasp, the mask has shoved my brother's face into the sandy ground and pinned his writhing body with a knee. Nan's knife falls to the dirt. A scream erupts from me, lonely in the still summer night. Seconds later, a sim point pricks my throat. I didn't even see the mask draw the weapon. Quiet, he says. Arms up. Now get inside. The mask uses one hand to yank Darren up by the neck, and the other to prod me on with his sim. My brother limps, face bloodied, eyes dazed. When he struggles, a fish on a hook, the mask tightens his grip. The back door of the house opens, and a red-caped legionnaire comes out. The house is secure, Commander. The mask shoves Darren at the soldier. Bind him up.
He's strong.
Then he grabs me by the hair, twisting until I cry out.
Hmm.
He bends his head to my ear, and I cringe, my terror caught in my throat.
I've always loved dark-haired girls.
I wonder if he has a sister, a wife, a woman. But it wouldn't matter if he did. To him, I'm not someone's family. I'm just a thing to be subdued, used, and discarded. The mask drags me down the hallway to the front room as casually as a hunter drags his kill. Fight, I tell myself. Fight! But as if he senses my pathetic attempts at bravery, his hand squeezes and pain lances through my skull. I sag and let him pull me along. Legionnaires stand shoulder to shoulder in the front room amid upturned furniture and broken bottles of jam. Trader won't get anything now. So many days spent over steaming kettles, my hair and skin smelling of apricot and cinnamon. So many jars, steamed and dried, filled and sealed. Useless. All useless. The lamps are lit and Nan and Pop kneel in the middle of the floor, their hands bound behind their backs. The soldier holding Darren shoves him to the ground beside them.
Shall I tie up the girl, sir?
Another soldier fingers the rope at his belt, but the mask leaves me between two burly legionnaires.
She's not going to cause any trouble.
He stabs at me with those eyes.
Are you?
I shake my head and shrink back, hating myself for being such a coward. I reach for my mother's tarnished armlet, wrapped around my bicep, and touch the familiar pattern for strength. I find none. Mother would have fought. She'd have died rather than face this humiliation. But I can't make myself move. My fear has ensnared me. A legionnaire enters the room, his face more than a little nervous.
It's not here, Commander.
The mask looks down at my brother.
Where's the sketchbook?
Darren stares straight ahead, silent. His breath is low and steady, and he doesn't seem dazed anymore. In fact, he's almost composed. The mask gestures a small movement. One of the legionnaires lifts Nan by her neck and slams her frail body against a wall. Nan bites her lip, her eyes sparking blue. Darren tries to rise, but another soldier forces him down. The mask scoops up a shard of glass from one of the broken jars. His tongue flickers out like a snake's as he tastes the jam.
Shame it's all gone to waste.
He caresses Nan's face with the edge of the shard.
You must have been beautiful once. Such eyes.
He turns to Darren.
Shall I carve them out of her?
It's outside the small bedroom window. In the hedge. I can't manage more than a whisper, but the soldiers hear. The mask nods, and one of the legionnaires disappears into the hallway. Darren doesn't look at me, but I feel his dismay. Why did you tell me to hide it? I want to cry out. Why did you bring the cursed thing home? The legionnaire returns with the book. For unending seconds, the only sound in the room is the rustling of pages as the mask flips through the sketches. If the rest of the book is anything like the page I found, I know what the mask will see. Martial knives, swords, scabbards, forges, formulas, instructions, things no scholar should know of, let alone recreate on paper.
How did you get into the weapons quarter, boy?
The mask looks up from the book.
Has the resistance been bribing some plebeian drudge to sneak you in?
I stifle a sob. Half of me is relieved Darien's no traitor. The other half wants to rage at him for being such a fool. Association with the scholar's resistance carries a death sentence.
I got myself in, my brother says. The resistance had nothing to do with it. You were seen entering the catacombs last night after curfew, the mask almost sounds bored, in the company of known scholar rebels. Last night he was home well before curfew, Pop speaks up, and it is strange to hear my grandfather lie, but it makes no difference. The mask's eyes are for my brother alone. The man doesn't blink as he reads Darren's face the way I'd read a book. Those rebels were taken into custody today, the mask says. One of them gave up your name before he died. What were you doing with them?
They followed me. Darren sounds so calm, like he's done this before, like he's not afraid at all.
I'd never met them before. And yet, they knew of your book here, told me all about it. How did they learn of it? What did they want from you?
I don't know. The mask presses the shard of glass deep into the soft skin below Nan's eye, and her nostrils flare. A trickle of blood traces a wrinkle down her face. Darren draws a sharp breath, the only sign of strain.
They asked for my sketchbook, he says. I said no. I swear it.
And their hideout?
I didn't see. They blindfolded me. We were in the catacombs.
Where in the catacombs?
I didn't see. They blindfolded me.
The mask eyes my brother for a long moment. I don't know how Darren can remain unruffled beneath that gaze.
You're prepared for this. The smallest bit of surprise creeps into the mask's voice. Straight back, deep breathing, same answers to different questions. Who trained you, boy?
When Darren doesn't answer, the mask shrugs.
A few weeks in prison will loosen your tongue.
Nan and I exchange a frightened glance. If Darren ends up in a martial prison, we'll never see him again. He'll spend weeks in interrogation, and after that they'll either sell him as a slave or kill him.
He's just a boy,
Pop speaks slowly, as if to an angry patient.
Please.
Steel flashes, and Pop drops like a stone. The mask moves so swiftly that I don't understand what he has done. Not until Nan rushes forward, not until she lets out a shrill keen, a shaft of pure pain that brings me to my knees.
Pop! Skies, not Pop!
A dozen vows sear themselves into my mind. I'll never disobey again. I'll never do anything wrong. I'll never complain about my work if only Pop lives. But Nan tears her hair and screams, and if Pop was alive, he'd never let her go on like that. He wouldn't have been able to bear it. Darren's calm is sheared away as if by a scythe, his face blanched with a horror I feel down to my bones. Nan stumbles to her feet and takes one tottering step toward the mask. He reaches out to her as if to put his hand on her shoulder. The last thing I see in my grandmother's eyes is terror. Then the mask's gauntleted wrist flashes once, leaving a thin red line across Nan's throat. A line that grows wider and redder as she falls. Her body hits the floor with a thud. Her eyes still open and shining with tears as blood pours from her neck and into the rug we knotted together last winter.
Sir, one of the legionnaires says, an hour until dawn. Get the boy out of here.
The mask doesn't give Nan a second glance.
And burn this place down.
He turns to me then, and I wish I could fade like a shadow into the wall behind me. I wish for it harder than I've ever wished for anything, knowing all the while how foolish it is. The soldiers flanking me grin at each other as the mask takes a slow step in my direction. He holds my gaze as if he can smell my fear,
A cobra enthralling its prey. No, please, no. Disappear. I want to disappear. The mask blinks, some foreign emotion flickering across his eyes. Surprise or shock, I can't tell. It doesn't matter, because in that moment, Darren leaps up from the floor. While I cowered, he loosened his bindings. His hands stretch out like claws as he lunges for the mask's throat. His rage lends him a lion's strength, and for a second he is every inch our mother. Honey hair glowing, eyes blazing, mouth twisted in a feral snarl. The mask backs into the blood pool near Nan's head, and Darren is on him, knocking him to the ground, raining down blows. The legionnaires stand frozen in disbelief and then come to their senses, surging forward, shouting and swearing. Darren pulls a dagger free from the mask's belt before the legionnaires tackle him. Liar, my brother shouts. Run! Don't run, liar. Help him. Fight. But I think of the mask's cold regard, of the violence in his eyes.
I've always loved dark-haired girls.
He will rape me. Then he will kill me. I shudder, and back into the hallway. No one stops me. No one notices. Liar! Darren cries out, sounding like I've never heard him, frantic, trapped. He told me to run. But if I screamed like that, he would come. He would never leave me. I stop. Help him, liar, a voice orders in my head. Move. And another voice, more insistent, more powerful. You can't save him. Do what he says. Run. Flame flickers at the edge of my vision, and I smell smoke. One of the legionnaires has started torching the house. In minutes, fire will consume it.
Bind him properly this time, and get him into an interrogation cell.
The mask removes himself from the fray, rubbing his jaw. When he sees me backing down the hallway, he goes strangely still. Reluctantly, I meet his eyes, and he tilts his head.
Run, little girl, he says.
My brother is still fighting, and his screams slice right through me. I know then that I will hear them over and over again, echoing in every hour of every day until I am dead or I make it right. I know it, and still I run. The cramped streets and dusty markets of the Scholar's Quarter blur past me like the landscape of a nightmare. With each step, part of my brain shouts at me to turn around, to go back, to help Darren. With each step, it becomes less likely, until it isn't a possibility at all, until the only word I can think is, run. The soldiers come after me, but I've grown up among the squat, mud brick houses of the quarter, and I lose my pursuers quickly. Dawn breaks, and my panicked run turns to a stumble as I wander from alley to alley. Where do I go? What do I do? I need a plan, but I don't know where to start. Who can offer me help or comfort? My neighbors will turn me away, fearing for their own lives. My family is dead, or imprisoned. My best friend, Zara, disappeared in a raid last year, and my other friends have their own troubles. I'm alone. As the sun rises, I find myself in an empty building deep in the oldest part of the quarter. The gutted structure crouches like a wounded animal amid a labyrinth of crumbling dwellings. The stench of refuse taints the air. I huddle in the corner of the room. My hair has slipped free of its braid and lays in hopeless tangles. The red stitches along the hem of my shift are ripped, the bright yarn limp. Nan sewed those hems for my 17th year fall, to brighten up my otherwise drab clothing. It was one of the few gifts she could afford. Now, she's dead. Like Pop, like my parents and sister, long ago. And Darin, taken, dragged to an interrogation cell where the marshals will do who knows what to him. Life is made of so many moments that mean nothing. Then one day, a single moment comes along to define every second that comes after. The moment Darin called out, that was such a moment. It was a test of courage, of strength. And I failed it. Liar. Run. Why did I listen to him? I should have stayed. I should have done something. I moan and grasp my head. I keep hearing him. Where is he now? Have they begun the interrogation? He'll wonder what happened to me. He'll wonder how his sister could have left him. A flicker of furtive movement in the shadows catches my attention, and the hair on my nape rises. A rat? A crow? The shadows shift, and within them two malevolent eyes flash. More sets of eyes join the first, baleful and slitted. Hallucinations, I hear Pop in my head, making a diagnosis, a symptom of shock. Hallucinations or not, the shadows look real. Their eyes glow with the fire of miniature suns, and they circle me like hyenas, growing bolder with each pass. We saw, they hiss. We know your weakness. He'll die because of you. No, I whisper. But they are right, these shadows. I left Darin. I abandoned him. The fact that he told me to go doesn't matter. How could I have been so cowardly? I grasp my mother's armlet, but touching it makes me feel worse. Mother would have outfoxed the mask. Somehow, she'd have saved Darin and Nan and Pop. Even Nan was braver than me. Nan with her frail body and burning eyes. Her backbone of steel. Mother inherited Nan's fire, and after her, Darin. But not me. Run, little girl. The shadows inch closer, and I close my eyes against them, hoping they'll disappear. I grasp at the thoughts ricocheting through my mind, trying to corral them. Distantly, I hear shouts and the thud of boots. If the soldiers are still looking for me, I'm not safe here. Maybe I should let them find me and do what they will. I abandoned my blood. I deserve punishment. But the same instinct that urged me to escape the mask in the first place drives me to my feet. I head into the streets, losing myself in the thickening morning crowds. A few of my fellow scholars look twice at me, some with wariness, others with sympathy. But most don't look at all. It makes me wonder how many times I walked right past someone in these streets who was running, someone who had just had their whole world ripped from them. I stop to rest in an alley slick with sewage. Thick black smoke curls up from the other side of the quarter, paling as it rises into the hot sky. My home. Burning. Nan's jams, Pop's medicines, Darin's drawings, my books, gone. Everything I am, gone. Not everything, liar. Not Darin. A grate squats in the center of the alley, just a few feet away from me. Like all grates in the quarter, it leads down into the Sarah's catacombs, home to skeletons, ghosts, rats, thieves, and possibly the scholars' resistance. Had Darin been spying for them? Had the resistance gotten him into the weapons quarter? Despite what my brother told the mask, it's the only answer that makes sense. Rumor has it that the resistance fighters have been getting bolder, recruiting not just scholars, but mariners from the free country of Marin, to the north
and tribesmen whose desert territory is an empire protectorate. Pop and Nan never spoke of the resistance in front of me. But late at night, I heard the murmuring of how the rebels freed scholar prisoners while striking out at the marshals, of how fighters raided the caravans of the martial merchant class, the Mercators, and assassinated members of their upper class, the Alastrians. Only the rebels stand up to the marshals. Elusive as they are the only weapon the scholars have. If anyone can get near the forges, it's them. The resistance, I realize, might help me. My home was raided and burned to the ground, my family killed because two of the rebels gave Darin's name to the Empire. If I can find the resistance and explain what happened, maybe they can help me break Darin free from prison. Not just because they owe me, but because they live by Izzat, a code of honor as old as the scholar people. The rebel leaders are the best of the scholars, the bravest. My parents taught me that before the Empire killed them. If I ask for aid, the resistance won't turn me away. I step toward the grate. I've never been in Sarah's catacombs. They snake beneath the entire city, hundreds of miles of tunnels and caverns, some packed with centuries' worth of bones. No one uses the crypts for burial anymore, and even the Empire hasn't mapped out the catacombs entirely. If the Empire, with all its might, can't hunt out the rebels, then how will I find them? You won't stop until you do. I lift the grate and stare into the black hole below. I have to go down there. I have to find the resistance. Because if I don't, my brother doesn't stand a chance. If I don't find the fighters and get them to help, I'll never see Darin again.
Chapter 4 Elias. By the time Helene and I reach Blackcliff's bell tower, nearly all of the school's 3,000 students have formed up. Dawn's an hour away, but I don't see a single sleepy eye. Instead, an eager buzz runs through the crowd. The last time someone deserted, the courtyard was covered in frost. Every student knows what's coming. I clench and unclench my fists. I don't want to watch this. Like all Blackcliff students, I came to the school at the age of 6, and in the 14 years since, I've witnessed punishments thousands of times. My own back is a map of the school's brutality. But deserters are always the worst. My body is tight as a spring, but I flatten my gaze and keep my expression emotionless. Blackcliff's subject masters, the centurions, will be watching. Drawing their ire when I'm so close to escaping would be unforgivably stupid. Helene and I walk past the youngest students, four classes of maskless yearlings who will have the clearest view of the carnage. The smallest are barely 7, the biggest nearly 11. The yearlings look down as we pass. We are upperclassmen, and they are forbidden from even addressing us. They stand poker straight, Sims hanging at precise 45-degree angles on their backs, boots spit-shined, faces blank as stone. By now, even the youngest yearlings have learned Blackcliff's most essential lessons. Obey, conform, and keep your mouth shut. Behind the yearlings sits an empty space in honor of Blackcliff's second tier of students, called fivers because so many die in their 5th year. At age 11, the centurions throw us out of Blackcliff and into the wilds of the Empire without clothes, food, or weaponry, to survive as best as we can for 4 years. The remaining fivers return to Blackcliff, receive their masks, and spend another 4 years as cadets, and then 2 more years as skulls. Hel and I are senior skulls, just completing our last year of training. The centurions monitor us from beneath the arches that line the courtyard.
hands on their whips as they await the arrival of Blackcliff's commandant. They stand as still as statues, their masks long since melded to their features. Any semblance of emotion, a distant memory. I put a hand to my own mask, wishing I could rip it off, even for a minute. Like my classmates, I received the mask on my first day as a cadet, when I was 14. Unlike the rest of the students, and much to Helene's dismay, the smooth liquid silver hasn't dissolved into my skin like it's supposed to. Probably because I take the damned thing off whenever I'm alone. I've hated the mask since the day an augur, an Empire holy man, handed it to me in a velvet-lined box. I hate the way it glooms onto me like some kind of parasite. I hate the way it presses into my face, molding itself to my skin. I'm the only student whose mask hasn't melded to him yet, something my enemies enjoy pointing out. But lately, the mask has started fighting back, forcing the melding process by digging tiny filaments into the back of my neck. It makes my skin crawl, makes me feel like I'm not myself anymore, like I'll never be myself again.
Vittorius!
Hell's lanky, sandy-haired platoon lieutenant, Demetrius, calls out to me as we take our spots with the other senior skulls.
Who is it? Who's the deserter?
I don't know. Dex and the Orcs brought him in. I look around for my lieutenant, but he hasn't arrived yet.
I hear it's a yearling.
Demetrius stares at a hunk of wood poking out of the blood-browned cobbles at the base of the bell tower. The whipping post.
An older one. A fourth year.
Helene and I exchange a look. Demetrius's little brother also tried to desert in his fourth year at Blackcliff, when he was only 10. He lasted 3 hours outside the gates before the legionnaires brought him in to face the commandant, longer than most.
Maybe it was a skull.
Helene scans the ranks of older students, trying to see if anyone is missing.
Maybe it was Marcus.
Varys, a member of my battle platoon who towers over the rest of us, says, grinning, his blonde hair popping up in an unruly cowlick.
Or Zack.
No such luck. Marcus, dark-skinned and yellow-eyed, stands at the front of our ranks with his twin, Zack, second-born, shorter and lighter, but just as evil. The snake and the toad, hell calls them. Zack's mask has yet to attach fully around his eyes, but Marcus's clings tightly, having joined with him so completely that all of his features, even the thick slant of his eyebrows, are clearly visible beneath it. If Marcus tried to remove his mask now, he'd take off half his face with it, which would be an improvement. As if he senses her glance, Marcus turns and looks Helene over with a predatory gaze of ownership that makes my hands itch to strangle him. Nothing out of the ordinary, I remind myself. Nothing to make you stand out. I force myself to look away. Attacking Marcus in front of the entire school would definitely qualify as out of the ordinary. Helene notices Marcus's leer, her hands ball into fists at her sides. But before she can teach the snake a lesson, the sergeant-at-arms marches into the courtyard.
Attention!
3,000 bodies swing forward. 3,000 pairs of boots snap together. 3,000 backs jerk as if yanked straight by a puppeteer's hand. In the ensuing silence, you could hear a tear drop. But we don't hear the commandant of Blackcliff Military Academy approach. We feel her, the way you feel a storm coming. She moves silently, emerging from the arches like a fair-haired jungle cat from the underbrush. She wears all black, from her tight-fitting uniform jacket to her steel-toed boots. Her blonde hair is pulled, as always, into a stiff knot at her neck. She's the only living female mask, or will be until Helene graduates tomorrow. But unlike Helene, the Commandant exudes a deathly chill, as if her grey eyes and cut-glass features were carved from the underbelly of a glacier.
"Bring the accused,"
she says. A pair of legionnaires march out from behind the bell tower, dragging a small, limp form. Beside me, Demetrius tenses. The rumors were right. The deserter's a fourth yearling, no older than 10. Blood drips down his face, blending into the collar of his black fatigues. When the soldiers dump him before the commandant, he doesn't move. The commandant's silver face reveals nothing as she looks down at the yearling, but her hand strays toward the spiked riding crop at her belt, fashioned out of bruised black ironwood. She doesn't remove it. Not yet.
"Fourth yearling, Falconius Barius."
Her voice carries, though it's soft, almost gentle.
"You abandoned your post at Blackcliff with no intention of returning. Explain yourself."
"No explanation, Commandant, sir."
He mouths the words we've all said to the Commandant 100 times. The only words you can say at Blackcliff when you've screwed up utterly. It's a trial to keep my face blank, to drive emotion from my eyes. Barius is about to be punished for the crime I'll be committing in less than 36 hours. It could be me up there in 2 days, bloodied, broken.
"Let us ask your peers their opinion."
The Commandant turns her gaze on us, and it's like being blasted by a frigid mountain wind.
"Is Yearling Barius guilty of treason?"
"Yes, sir!"
The shout shakes the flagstones, rabid in its ferocity.
"Legionnaires," the Commandant says, "take him to the post."
The resulting roar from the students jerks Barius out of his stupor, and as the legionnaires tie him to the whipping post, he writhes and bucks. His fellow fourth yearlings, the same boys he fought and sweated and suffered with for years, thump the flagstones with their boots and pump their fists in the air. In the row of senior skulls in front of me, Marcus shouts his approval, his eyes lit with unholy joy. He stares at the Commandant with a reverence reserved for deities. I feel eyes on me. To my left, one of the centurions is watching. Nothing out of the ordinary. I lift my fist and cheer with the rest of them, hating myself. The Commandant draws her crop, caressing it like a lover. Then she brings it whistling down onto Barius's back. His gasp echoes through the courtyard, and every student falls silent, united in a shared, if brief, moment of pity. Blackcliff's rules are so numerous that it's impossible not to break them at least a few times. We've all been tied to that post before. We've all felt the bite of the Commandant's crop. The quiet doesn't last. Barius screams, and the students howl in response, flinging jeers at him. Marcus is loudest of all, leaning forward, practically spitting in excitement. Varys rumbles his approval. Even Demetrius manages a shout or two, his green eyes flat and distant, as if he is somewhere else entirely. Beside me, Helene cheers, but there's no joy in her expression, only a stern sadness. The rules of Blackcliff demand that she voice her anger at the deserter's betrayal. So she does. The Commandant seems indifferent to the clamor, fixated as she is on her work. Her arm rises and falls with a dancer's grace. She circles Barius as his skinny limbs begin to seize, pausing between each lash, no doubt pondering how she can make the next one more painful than the last. After 25 lashes, she takes him by his limp stalk of a neck and turns him around.
"Face them," she says. "Face the men you've betrayed."
Barius's eyes beseech the courtyard, seeking out anyone willing to offer him a shred of pity. He should have known better. His gaze collapses to the flagstones. The cheers continue, and the crop comes.